unwilling or unable to perform Yibum or Chalitza was then extended in 18th century Prague to include the case where the brother-in-law had been missing for a long time, or to include the case where the brother-in-law was otherwise incapacitated, for example, being deaf and married, or being insane, or what have you. And that, in fact, that within the Ashkenazic community, this was an established procedure, while at the same time, at least at the time of the Shulchan Aruch, he objected to it, and therefore there was some tradition in the Sephardic community against it, but gradually the Sephardic community also agreed to this remedy, and it was therefore an accepted remedy to the problem of the impossible Yavam. Up until the midpoint, or even towards the end of the 19th century, where we saw last week, for example, that when the Aruch HaShulchan brings this law, he attaches so many clauses and restrictions and technicalities to it to make it almost a practical impossibility. But of course, the issue of the unfit Yavam is only a minor problem in terms of what was happening to Jewish marriage problems in starting at the end of the 19th century until the present. And I guess we'll keep going for a while, maybe this week and next, on the subject, but it's from the 1880s until the present, the story is sad. That is, it's the same sad story repeating itself over and over again. We find that a certain group of rabbanim, or a certain rabbi, or a certain rabbinical constituency realizes that there's a serious problem here, and therefore institutes some remedy to the problem. The remedy either being hafta'at kiddushin, or kiddushin on kognai, or some mix of the two of them. Then they are violently attacked by people to their right who maintain that this is completely improper. At some later occasion, these same people realize that they're faced with the same problem and come up with the same solution or some variation on it, and then are immediately attacked by the people to their right. And this goes on for 100 years with essentially nothing really getting done because of the collapse of rabbinical authority during this whole period. So, as I say, it's a sad story, and maybe we will spend this evening looking at the period of what was happening from the 1880s until the 1930s, and then if we have the stomach for it, maybe we'll do it from the 1930s to the 1990s. But the story is unfortunately always the same. Let's begin. So what's on the agenda for tonight? On the agenda for tonight was when the laws of divorce in France were modified. That is, from 1816 until about, in other words, from the reaction to the revolutionary period, where there was sort of a restitution of law influenced by the Catholic Church, until the end of the 19th century, and that is until the 1880s, there was no divorce, no civil divorce in France.
So you couldn't get divorced?
That's, if you were married according to the civil law of France, you couldn't get divorced. Exactly. There was no divorce. There's still no divorce according to the Catholic Church, isn't that right?
Sure.
As long as the Catholic Church was the overriding influence, there was no divorce. So when there's no civil divorce, there was no really serious problem as far as Jewish marriages are concerned, from the point of view of a couple being married according to Jewish law and then getting a divorce in the secular courts. But in, we'll see, 1884 or thereabouts, the French government passed a divorce law, and the moment that that happened, the rabbis realized that this was posed an impossible situation and tried to attempt to resolve this situation basically on the basis of hafka'at kiddushin, with maybe a little sprinkling of a tnai thrown in. And this was more or less agreed upon by all of the rabbis in France, except for the extreme right-wingers. They appealed to the leading rabbanim in Eastern Europe, who of course were not faced with this problem at all, and regarded this move by the French rabbis as just another instance of the Reform movement rearing its head, and therefore violently attacked them and used their influence with the Baron de Rothschild to eliminate this particular takana. Then, a few years later, in the 1920s or 30s, or thereabouts, the rabbis in Constantinople, again realizing that the institution of civil divorce in the Turkish Empire was going to threaten the communities there, instituted a remedy of Tanai B'Kedushin.
Why divorce was never a problem as such, like it was in France. I mean, Halakha always allowed divorce.
Yeah, but you didn't have such a thing as a civil divorce. In other words, what happens if a man and a woman get married in the Young Israel, and they're married Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, and then, unfortunately, as happens now in 50% of all marriages, if that's the correct statistic, they don't hit it off, and the woman goes...
Well, that number is higher.
Huh?
That number is higher.
That number is higher.
Talking about Young Israel women.
But of the higher proportion of people that don't hit it off, a majority, which then brings it down to about 50%, decide to get a divorce. And of those 50% that decide to get a divorce, say 30% get a divorce in the civil court. The husband refuses to give a get. The woman goes out and gets a divorce. Then what happens? That's the problem.
Halakhically, they're still married.
Halakhically, they're still married. Civilly, they're not married. And then this woman will feel no compunction about going out and marrying someone else.
There was a state law that allowed civil divorce. It was aiding and abetting a halakhic approach to divorce. And nobody can just go off.
That's right. As long as there was no civil divorce in France, then a French couple who didn't get along did what the other majority of French couples who didn't get along did, namely suffered. But they didn't get a divorce. So that doesn't bother anybody. But once they can get a divorce in the civil court, and the husband refuses to give a get, then there is a huge problem. And if the divorce rate is non-negligible, this is a very big problem. So the question was just how to deal with that.
So there's no big problem with Kedushin of Sinai. They just don't get divorced. Why does Kedushin of Sinai enter into this?
What do you do? How are you going? We'll read it in the text, but how are you going to remedy the situation where you're now the chief rabbi of France, and you have all your assistant chief rabbis, there are lots of chief rabbis, like the Rosh Galut, the Grand Rabbin, is a widespread title. So you have all of these Grand Rabbins, they all have their constituencies, they marry these couples according to religious Jewish law, they're not particularly observant, they're not particularly non-observant, maybe more non-observant than observant, and the wife goes off and gets a divorce in the civil court. And what do? Then she wants to get married again. I mean, you're just going to have a large number of people, large number of women who are halakhically married and who are, according to the laws of France, unmarried. So unless you make some provision of revoking the Kedushin, then you're going to have a huge number of mamzerim. So unless you have some remedy for this.
Why become friends? Any country.
Any country in which there's civil marriage and divorce.
Even this country.
That's right. That's right.
In Eastern Europe, there was no civil divorce?
In Eastern Europe, there was no civil marriage, which played a central role, and there was the rabbis still had control of the community. They didn't look 20 years down the line. I mean, there's certainly a difference in Warsaw between 1920 and 1890. But the rabbis living in Kovna and in Warsaw or in any of those places, or in Vilnius, just simply did not realize that the situation in Western Europe, as far as Jews were concerned, was completely different. Okay? So what I'm saying is, the history of the situation is... So then the rabbis in Constantinople instituted this, a Kedushin of Tanai, and Rav Uziel, who had then moved from Constantinople to Tel Aviv, and eventually was the Sephardic chief rabbi, disallowed the Takana of Constantinople, and then he himself instituted a form of Kedushin al Tanai, and he was attacked on the right by Rav Zevin and Rav Hillman, So that one just has this sequence of events.
Pilgrims are by Herzog's father?
Pilgrims are by Herzog's father. Okay? So that's the story for tonight. Well, let's take a look at the details of it. But as I say, this is a self-repeating story. I won't do it tonight, but the same thing happened here. I mean, Rabbi Lieberman and the conservative rabbis tried to institute a perfectly halachically viable form of Kiddushin al-Tanai. Which would serve to solve the problem. They were violently attacked by Rav Henkin, who says there can't be any such thing as Kiddushin al Tanai. And then a few years later, Rav Henkin introduces some form of Kiddushin al Tanai, Vavkos Kiddushin, and he's attacked by Rav Kasher.
Who's Rav Kasher?
Or Benachem Kasher.
I've heard of him.
The Torah Shlema, you've heard of that?
Yeah.
And then Rav Kasher did something and was attacked on the right by his people. So what I'm saying is, what you're seeing here, unfortunately, is a failure of the system. Okay, let's begin. So I don't know if you read French, so let me start by simply reading to you in translation. On the first page, this is from the local newspaper in Paris, the local Jew, what's it called, the Jewish Times, Jewish Act. This is the edition inspired by a transcribed letter addressed to all the rabbis and accompanied by a deep work of our scholarly collaborator, Monsieur le Grand Rabbin Michel Bat. We are happy to place our abilities at publication to these two pieces, the importance of which it's superfluous to insist upon. Without making a decision, because it would obviously be premature on the merits of the consultation of Mr. Weil, we certainly can allow ourselves to say that it contains a considerable element for the request opened by the chief rabbi of this French synagogue. The question treated here is difficult, but it is necessary and even urgent to see it. The University of the Israel Univerzovich, which devoted several months in preparing this particular number, continues to receive, within the limits of its ability, all communications which will facilitate the solution. So that's the editorial here. Now here's the letter from the Grand Rabbi Isidore of France. I propose to make an appeal to all the members of the Rabbinical Corps to recommend the study of the grave questions which were raised by the law of the 29th of July, 1884, which reestablished divorce in France. I can only thank and congratulate my learned colleague and friend, the Grand Rabbi Michel Bay, for having seen my wish and in advance of my appeal, for by his consultation on the means of reconciling the civil law with the religious law in matters of divorce, an opinion which I have read with great interest and which contains within it the seriousness of the situation for which it was treated. Okay, et cetera, et cetera. All right, now let's read the opinion.
What page are we on?
No, it's just on page 516, the second next page. Okay, so this is consultation, the opinion, on the means of reconciling the dispositions of the religious and civil laws in matters of divorce. Okay? And he cites Uvata Lakwanim Vial Aliyim Vial Ashofet Asher Yebayanim Hain, that we have to take the job. We have to do our job, and he's perfectly right. Among the grave questions which impose on the conscience and solicitude of the rabbinical corps, and which are of the order of the day in a more or less immediate future, is that of divorce attracts the attention of all of us. So long as civil divorce was controlled by the law of the 8th of May, 1816, which had abrogated it, and therefore made it impossible for Jews, as their other citizens of other religions, the French rabbinate didn't have to bother about the conditions of the dissolution of the marriage, if it was, except as a matter of theory and for the love of the study of the halacha.
The law of 1816 did what?
Abolished divorce, which had been instituted, I imagine, by the French Revolution.
You couldn't get divorced.
Right. From 1816 to 1884, you could not get divorced in France. So that was the Catholic law. It's a Catholic country. And like today, can you get divorced in Ireland?
No.
So, you can't?
Can?
No, I think it was pretty recent.
France is still under Catholic.
But still, from 1884 until the present, you could get divorced in France. Okay. But it's not the same, since the divorce has entered the realm of practical life, and due to the law of July 29, 1884, it has taken its place in the law, like in the reality of social existence. Once this has happened, an essential duty imposed itself on the representatives of Judaism, and that is to call to all the faithful, and all of the interested in particular, that not everything is finished with the end of the tribunal, according to which the divorce has been declared by the official of a civil state. The double act
means if you get a civil divorce, you don't have to count the things that you get. Things are not done. That's what he said.
He's saying not everything is finished once you've got a divorce in the divorce court.
Still got a problem.
Right.
Yeah, it keeps from a second marriage.
This double act requires also the religious divorce ceremony, according to the minute formalities of the rabbinical law, and according to which it is not allowed for a divorced woman, prohibited for a woman who is divorced according to civil law, to undertake a new marriage, which would be declared, in this case, an illegitimate union. The Jewish spouses are therefore put on guard by this law. They it will be that the religion can only the religion can dissolve which has been ruptured, just as the creation of the conjugal rights enters into the category of spiritual facts. And subject to the intervention of religious authority. Okay.
The civil marriage we have, is that particular?
We discussed that several weeks ago. But let's forget about that. Let's suppose this couple has been married according to rabbinical law. And the question is that most couples are going to be faced with this situation who are not particularly religious, especially when the husband is not compliant, will not get a get. Okay? We should begin immediately with a possibility, and perhaps, if not the certainty, of a conflict between the civil law and the religious law as far as the validity of divorce. Suppose that the divorce was pronounced by the civil tribunal for the benefit of the woman, for one of the reasons according to Code 1, she is assured of being able to achieve a divorce according to French law. Faithfulness to the prescription of the Jewish law, respecting the obligations which are imposed upon her, the divorced woman will then turn to the rabbi and ask him to proceed with a religious divorce, she feels is coming to her. But in deferring to this appeal, the rabbi will turn to the husband and ask him to send a get, which will free the woman. What will then happen? Far from responding positively to this request, the husband will feel impressed on this occasion to satisfy his hatred or his greed, and will formally refuse his cooperation. Happy to bind the chain to which the woman is enslaved. What will be the eventual unfolding of this conjugal drama? what will happen to the victim of this domestic tyrant, caught between her faith and her vital interests, reduced to the alternative, to the alternatives of either being condemned to celibacy, forced celibacy, or to undertake an illegitimate a marriage, or an act of adultery, according to the interpretation of the Jewish law. What response will the rabbi make to this misfortune, to this unfortunate woman, who, being divorced civilly, is still entrapped religiously, and asks him immediately to aid her out of her impasse? Will he answer to her, "We can't do anything," which, far from remedying the situation, will only aggravate it and push it to even more extreme consequences? So the problem is clear. Clearly put.
No answer, only problem.
In order to facilitate the solution to such a difficult problem, one must turn to a conscientious study of the canonical, that means halakhic law, which regulates this matter. And in order to give treat this as seriously as possible, it would be best for us to begin with a form of a devil's advocate, that is, to explain the reasons which militate in favor of maintaining the rigorous, strict interpretation of the laws of divorce without any attenuation. Okay? So here is a presentation of those motives alleged by the people who want to maintain the status quo as far as the application of the laws of divorce are concerned. To support their opinion, the partisans of the status quo, relative to the procedure of the get, invoke the triple authority of the scripture, the Masorah, and rabbinical codes, and so on. We don't need to go into review of this. At any event, I will leave this. I'm getting a little tired of translating from the French. I will leave this for those of you who read French to read that he, in fact, attempts to introduce an explicit notion of Kol HaMakarei Shel Data Rabbanan Makarei. You return to page 527. Conclusion. After having examined all the different aspects of this big question of civil divorce and its relations with religious divorce, and having exposed the various opinions in elucidating it and discussing the texts of the tradition and the rabbinical code which regulate this matter, and put in the light of solicitude of the holy legislator for the rights and the interests of the Jewish woman, and having shown that it is in the very same tradition that one finds elements of the solution of this problem, we are now going to formulate our conclusion in the form of a project, in the form of a project of declaration, which we will submit to the approval, for the approval and adhesion of all of the members of the rabbinical corps. Project, declaration, propose the declaration. I, the undersigned, considering that the law of the 29th of July, 1884, has reestablished divorce in France, and that it is the nature and which entails for the Jewish bride many difficult consequences under the double relation between her religious and social situation, and considering that according to the terms of Jewish law, the woman will not be able to be the benefit of a divorce proclaimed in her favor if the husband refused to sanction the divorce by a get. And because of such an eventuality placed between her interests and her duties, she will be exposed to the double alternative to either sacrifice her faith or freedom, or her faith and her freedom. And since this is not just a pure hypothesis for which the legislator need not preoccupy himself, but a factual reality menacing, threatening to multiply in direct proportion to the demands for divorce, and considering that it is for a duty upon the an imperative duty upon the religious authority to intervene in all cases which affect the conscience of the faithful, and to never forget that the inheritance of powers and responsibility of interpreters of the script, written and oral tradition require some conciliation to the degree possible between the holy prescriptions and the necessary social pressures. And in view of the text of the Mosaic Law of Divorce, and in view of the dispositions of the rabbinical code according to divorce, and particularly those relative to igun, that is to say, the necessity to support the widow or the divorcee from and protect her from consequences of forced celibacy, and in view of the discussions of the Mishnah and the Talmud being having treated the non-existent of the nullity of divorces written or delivered by non-Jewish tribunals, and the fact that this invalidation of these acts is no less than absolute, and intending the fact that the reasons for this nullity will disappear according to the faculty formally recognized by the rabbinical council of validating any get whatsoever if it is regarded and affirmed by taken in its literal sense. We therefore declare all the faithful whose husband refused to complete a civil divorce by the delivery of a get, and if this divorce has been pronounced to the benefit of the wife or the husband, the act delivered by the civil tribunal assures the liberation of the Jewish wife and authorizes her to contract a new marriage, provided that it be accompanied by a rabbinical act which constitutes the validity and declares that according to the laws of Moses and Israel. In other words, he's saying that there's going to be an act of hafka'at kiddushin according to the old principle of Hafka'at Kiddushin, that the Chachamim, the rabbis of France, will be Mafkia the Kiddushin retroactively if there's a situation where a civil divorce has been granted and there's no possibility of religious divorce. That was what was desired for that was a document that was circulated for approval to all the rabbis of France. Okay? Now we got some objections, immediate objections. Divorce in Chalitza. As we promised, we are going to insert here the reply of Monsieur Le Rabbin Guggenheim on the question of divorce without changing a single word and without responding. The question, nevertheless, is one of the most delicate, and Monsieur Le Rabbin Weil, in his remarkable confrontation, which opens this number, has never pretended to have said the last word on this question. One of our venerable colleagues of Italy has addressed us on his side some observations on the issue of Chalitza, which offer, in cases of absolute refusal, the same difficulty in a divorce. You will find an extract of his letter after his of Rabbi of Monsieur Guggenheim, and that was by the editor. Okay? The key in Guggenheim's observation is some number E, which I think again reflects a sort of short-sightedness in here. We cannot allow ourselves to use the dispositions of a legislative law, which is subject to political fluctuation, political and social fluctuations, to serve as a model for religious law. This latter may appear inconvenient, it is a fatal and infallible flaw of all laws and not be possible to please everyone. And then he cites Lo Nitna Torah L'Malachei HaSharet, which has exactly the opposite meaning that he wants to attribute to it. But one should not jump to conclusions, but what is being considered here, we repeat, adultery. Mishum kutzuta, mishum inguna, sharina neshet dishvam. So here is the right wing response, just blindly saying no, without really coming to grips with the situation. But this wasn't the only no. Grand Rabbi X repeats the possibility of doing
Where's the Sari Union? Guggenheim is from where?
Well, I know the family. It's from Alsace. Elie Guggenheim used to come to the shiur about 15 years ago, if you remember. Red beard. He was studying at MIT for 4 or 5 years. He was a regular member, but about 15 years ago. Okay.
I was just wondering if he maybe came from a part of France where maybe he still held tighter control over his community.
Well, it came from Alsace and Lorraine, where there was still tighter control over the communities. Okay?
But there were also more religious.
Mm-hmm.
So they had tighter control.
Then there's some questions from Michelle Vey. I don't know who that is.
That's the same guy.
Is it the same one?
Yeah,
so I guess it's the same one. And he responds to this, saying that Kedushin al-Tanai isn't the best answer, and therefore God Kedushin is better. And then, as I say, this was violently opposed by the rabbis in Eastern Europe. If we continue on this sad topic, I'll bring some of the chuvas, like from the Netziv and so on. There was a whole book written by a man by the name Lubetzky called Ein Tanai B'Nesuin, which unfortunately it may have been lost or otherwise buried in the Harvard Library. At least I couldn't get it for tonight. I asked for, if it becomes available, I'll have it next week, but if the catalogers have lost it, then it's lost.
About when was that written?
That was written around this period in response to this, 1890 or thereabouts. And after a long discussion back and forth, finally the assembly of the French rabbis in 1907 decided to do something. So that's a couple of pages further on. It's number 427, but you know, it's the next volume. It's 15 years later. So, or how many of years later? So, it says here, you have it?
Yes.
General Assembly of the Members of the Unions of French Rabbis. So this is now in 1907. The General Assembly of the Members of the Union of the French Rabbis met on the 11th, on Tuesday, the 11th of June at 9 o'clock in the morning in the consistorial room of the temple on Rue de la Victoire. Placed at its disposal by the Consistoire of Paris by the request of the Central Consistoire. And then there's a list of all the rabbis who were there. et cetera, et cetera.
Was Bain along the line?
Apparently. Let's turn to page 430. The order of the day was opened by the reports of Mr. Lehmann and Mr. Andre Emmanuel Vey on the issue of get and chalitza. On the beginning of the discussion and with agreement with Mr. Vey, Mr. Lehmann gave a lecture on the proposed resolution. The General Assembly of the members of the Union of French Rabbis, considering that our ancient teachers and our ancient communities were attempting ceaselessly attempting to act in a matter to deal with the question of Yibum, and which was for a long time abolished in fact, and was never for the woman anything but a cause which alienated her liberty, and was placed against the wish of the legislator in a state of servitude vis-a-vis the brother of her deceased husband, and which notably has given powers to the religious authorities to weigh the wish of this person to obligate herself to submit to the chalitza ceremony, as unpleasant as it is, uniquely in order to give the widow of her brother a free and entire disposition of its her person, and
the brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Well, his brother.
His brother.
Sonfer. His brother, her husband, the widow of his brother.
All right, let's skip to the next to the bottom paragraph. And therefore, it became absolutely and necessarily urgent on the present state of matters to put an end to intolerable abuses, and for the purpose of the intent and the interest of the religion and morality, which has been a purpose and a guarantee of our traditional legislation. For those that concern the competence of the chief rabbis and moral leaders of the communities, in view of the declaration of Ramosha Insulus, citing the religious authorities of all times, the right to make resolutions, to make legislation which are forced by the necessity, religious and moral necessities of the time, and in view of the declaration of the Rashba, who recognized the rights of authorities of all countries, in particular those which concern the validity or non-validity of the marriages, that is, the issue of Hafka'at Kiddushin, could be in the hands of the local communities, has decided to adopt the formula admitted in the communities of Moravia and Bohemia in the 14th century, I guess it should be the 15th century, approved and recognized by Rabbi Yisrael Isserlein, that's the Tumas Hadeshen, the scholarly author of Tumas Hadeshen, after Rabbi Yisrael Grishon, that's Rabbi Yisrael Miguna, and by Rav Moshe Isserlein, and all of the commentaries accredited to the Shulchan Aruch, and finally by Rav Moshe Sofer, it should be the leading authority, Talmudic authority of the 19th century, and which in consequence, in a situation where contrary to his duty, and by an absolutely arbitrary act on his part, the brother-in-law refuses chalitza, the widow will be free of all obligation. A decision for Edirim 1690 of the Beth Din of Mandua fixed on this matter the following procedure, etc. Communication of Rabbi Camarini, Grand Rabbi Parma. The General Assembly of the Rabbi Union of Rabbi French Rabbis, considering on the other hand that if a civil divorce will be produced, especially under circumstances for which, according to the law, it is declared that the separation of the married couple, it is almost certain that religious divorce will not be pronounced, and therefore it will result from this that the religious marriage previously contracted will lead to a situation of one of two alternatives, both absolutely unbearable from the religious point of view, because the woman will be an aguna, that is, condemned to perpetual quasi-widowhood, or she will be remarried in a civil law, which, and then she will be an eshet ish, that is, living in a state of adultery, which the law by all means wants to prevent. And in those circumstances, it is necessary to employ a juridical means to effect the dissolution of this marriage under these circumstances. And since under the circumstances, the new laws for us in France, because of the result of the laws of 1884 and 1886 on divorce, bear an extreme difficulty of facts and consequences for the honor of families, religion, and morality, it is necessary to invoke with a great deal of force these same facts and principles and conclusions in the preceding decision. And in view of the competence and the declarations cited above of the Rashba and Rav Moshe Isserles has decided that the formula of marriage precedingly adopted will include, imply with it the same effects as what happens when there's a civil divorce, and in consequence, in case where there's an unjustifiable abuse, that is, in all the cases where the religious divorce of being the right circumstances, the husband civilly divorced, according to his own decision, refuses to give such a divorce to his wife,
somewhat reticent, but he's from Canada. I wanted to prove that he helped with immigration.
No, I don't have to prove that.
That's, I want to put you on the test.
Congratulations,
beautiful. Thank you.
The religious authority then will have the right and the duty to pronounce the annulment of the marriage and declare the woman free of all obligations. Okay? So that was the basic decision. In other words, they were going to decide on the basis of Hafka'at Kiddushin. Okay? This was 1907. Hmm? Yeah, and all of this is from 1907. The conclusion is that they were going to be Makia Kiddushin under those circumstances. Then, here, for example, on page 524, is a reply from the Rabbi Weisskopf. I've just taken note of the decision taken by members of the Grand Union of French Rabbis. I consider it as a duty to declare that these decisions don't appear to me to be conformal with our traditions or with the texts, our religious texts, and so on and so forth. And
he doesn't like it.
Who is he?
I don't know. I don't know why several pages exist. I wanted to point out something else if I can find it, just as an aside, because it's something that we discussed. An interesting aside, by the way, on page 434.
The previous page.
Previous page, on the very top. It has nothing to do with what we're discussing, but it has to do with a topic that we discussed in the shiur here many times in the past. After several votes without any result, the assembly, by a majority of voices, came to the following decision. It is permissible on Sabbath and holidays, in conformance with the conditions fixed by traditional laws, to utilize the subway, right? The mechanical modes of consultation.
Does that mean the subway or a car?
No, it means mechanical. Let's put it down on the bottom. What is subject to religious restrictions? One knows that according to traditional law, it is not permitted on the Sabbath or the holidays to touch money, to go outside of a legal radius of 2,000 amot from the town, and to, I don't know what this means, to make great trips if it's not for a social or religious duty.
Business.
At any event, that was the situation. The rabbis in France were more or less forced to retract in the face of major opposition from